Good evening. All right, reading chapter numbers 32. My records are correct. Landon had the last question. So that'll put Logan number one this evening. Question number one. The question is, what piqued the interest of the children of Reuben and Gad concerning the land east of the Jordan? Logan, would you like to answer that?
Well, this land bore great promise, and at this time, they hadn't crossed the Jordan, so they hadn't known what the promised land, the land of Canaan, would look like. They said it looked pretty good, so they kind of wanted to stay there. It says in the Bible that it was well-watered and good to raise livestock.
Wanted to feed their sheep and their cattle. If this picture is correct, I looked around and supposedly this is land of Gilead, so kind of like the western United States. Who else would like to address why Reuben and Gad wanted to stay on the east side of the Jordan? Taylor?
Just to go off of things Logan said, and you mentioned, I know a lot of commentators talked about Bedouins using this land. I don't know if still with all the Middle Eastern conflicts, but for sure, as far as Palestine goes, seemed to be pretty well watered. And both these tribes had large amounts of livestock, and we'll see later on, even part of Manasseh takes this land as well. Both of these tribes also camped on the south side of the tabernacle, so not only were their interests kind of aligned, they were in the same proximity, along with Simeon. You know, Simeon decreases. And so there's speculation that perhaps this was an ongoing discussion that these two tribes had had, the leaders, and that's why they come to Moses together instead of independently, coming to this joint agreement to sort of split this land, since it was both of their interests to possess some of this. This is an unwise choice. We'll see later on in this chapter and then throughout the rest of the Old Testament for a variety of reasons, but there were a lot of good reasons for them to want it. As has been mentioned, certainly the farmland, but if we think about it from a more benevolent sense, that's not necessarily where it was coming from, but this would have left more room for the other tribes on the other side of Jordan. They would have had two tribes out of the way, so they could have had more land. Potentially, this would have been another buffer for Israel to keep invading armies from coming from the east, less strife between the tribes of Israel fighting for the same scarce resources. So there are some potential benevolent reasons for why this would be good for Israel, but we see later in the chapter this was mostly due to them just wanting the best, sort of in the vein of Lot, wanting the best land for livestock for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Dennis?
Just a comment about the over back over 31, talks about the numbers, the sheer numbers to be here. Staggering 675,000 sheep, 72,000 camels, and the rest of it. I can't even imagine, you know, what that is. And when I look at the map, how it's divided up, they almost don't have quite as much as the people on the other side.
Right, yeah, that's...
That they needed to sustain their kind of livestock.
That's your point. That's a lot of livestock, and some of the commentators speculated that these two tribes maybe gained a little bit more of it from that battle with Midian. Anybody else want to address why they wanted this land of Gilead? Bill.
Yeah, you'd think, as again the writer pointed out, after 400 years of hearing about the Promised Land, and all this effort put into going there and realizing it and seeing what's there, here they're willing to take the bird in the hand, so to speak, and we're good right here. We'll stay right here. And it was pointed out that this kind of maybe somewhat typical of mankind, seeing something that appears to be addressing their needs, and I'll be satisfied here, and not willing to trust the Lord and go with the Lord. I mean, they didn't know what lay ahead, and as has been pointed out, they'll have plenty of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on this question? Question two. Why was Moses troubled over the request made by Reuben and Gad? This covers verses 6 to 15. Cannot remember your name alone. Would you like to answer the question?
Sure. I think the overarching reason why Moses is troubled with this request is that it kind of rejects the promise of God. As Bill just said, there was 400 years of buildup to this from the promise made to Abraham. It seems like they're kind of rejecting the gift of God. And he mentions how it's they're kind of almost betraying their brethren, and they're kind of it would be a discouragement to their brethren. And he mentions and compares them to their fathers, who in past times, obviously when the spies were sent to survey the land of Canaan and came back, only Caleb and Joshua were the ones that were for going and were pleasing in God's sight. And the rest, obviously, were not, and obviously that caused the wonder. But Moses is just displeased because they're kind of rejecting God's gift.
Yeah, thank you, Cam. Who else would like to address this? Bart?
Yeah, it's already been mentioned, and I think the most important part is the promised land is on the west side of Jordan. And for them to say, we want to stay over here in this area, they're essentially doing the same thing as Moses points out that their fathers did years before, and saying, we don't want to enter the promised land. The kings, Og and Sihon, and the Midianites have already been defeated. And so Moses apparently assumes that they're not wanting the battle, because the battle has already occurred, and so they're saying, basically, we just want to stay here and not battle anymore. And so, for those reasons, the tabernacle is going to be in the promised land, God's people are going to be in the promised land, and they're putting their eyes on this territory. As Taylor pointed out, it's like Lot. Lot did not necessarily commit sin by looking at the plains of Sodom and Gomorrah, but he certainly feasted his eyes on that area and then went down there. And then, even though, as we find out later in the New Testament, his heart was a just heart, in that he was hurt by the sin of that area, his family was destroyed. He paid great consequence for it. The same is going to be true of Reuben and Gad. Their decision that they're going to make, and Manasseh, makes them the first nation, the first tribes that are taken by the Assyrians when the Assyrians come later to take them. And then the last part of this, maybe why Moses jumped ahead and was angry with them, is, as again has been pointed out, a part of the south side rebellion. You know, the incident at Baal Peor, we speculated when they engaged in idolatry, perhaps was led by the Simeonites, who are on the south side. And Korah's rebellion years earlier had involved the Reubenites. So this south side group, these tribes down here on the south side, I think Moses had it in for them. They're the troublemakers. They're always causing problems. And here they are. We're not going to cross over. We're not going to, you know, do what God wants us to do. And so the presumption is that they have wicked motivation for this. And I like how he says that you will discourage the heart of the children of Israel. And that's true even today. If we don't believe, if we're not interested in the Lord, if we're lazy, that has an effect on church. But the opposite is true. If we're excited and we're wanting to work and we have a good attitude and good spirit, then it encourages
us. Yeah, the point about a lot of it was, that's kind of intriguing, that it is very close to the same location. I think this Arnon River is the so it's just right here at the bottom of where Reuben's area is, so it's very close to the same place. The well-watered plain of Jordan. Who else would like to address why Moses was troubled over the request of Reuben again? Taylor?
Hey, Cameron mentioned it already, but this is a very practical concern for Moses, in that the spies has been 40 years ago, the rebellion of Israel, because of the report brought back from the spies. So as has already been mentioned, if certain tribes see other tribes starting to settle, it would be very easy to not want to continue this conquest, take the, as has been mentioned, bird in the hand already, and just settle down here. So it's a very practical concern of Moses's. And some commentators take the position that maybe he was overreacting. It's hard to say. I don't know that I'd agree with that necessarily. But as far as rebellions of Israel go, this is very much on the benign end. There's no taking Moses out and calls to stone or go back to Egypt. So this is pretty minimal, but certainly they are rebuked, and rightly so. And it's interesting, we've talked about different events thus far in Numbers and sort of a contrast between how they're depicted in Numbers and in the first few chapters of Deuteronomy. And this is one of those events. In Deuteronomy chapter 3, I think it's verse 19, this is presented almost as God's idea. Or verse 18 of Deuteronomy 3, it says, "Then I, Moses, commanded you at that time, saying, the Lord your God has given you this land to possess. All you men of valor shall cross over armed before your brethren, the children of Israel." And then goes on to give the same details. So we've seen this a few times already, the tone here versus in Deuteronomy. Make of that what you will. But ultimately, the request is approved by God.
Now, Kaufman, he explored the idea of if this was a sin or not. I think he brought up the part about Lot, where they put in their physical needs before their spiritual and so forth. And also mentioned, like you were talking about, was this plan the Lord's or was this their devising? So it seems to me from this chapter, it's theirs and it is a compromise. Who else would like to explore why Moses was troubled over this? Bill?
So let's do a little geography. Look where the bottom of Reuben is, the Ammon or Arnon River, about the middle of the D on dead. So from there going up, now go to your next slide.
Middle of D on what?
On dead. So
okay.
So the Arnon River there. Okay. So picture, there you go, Arnon River. I don't know where the camp is right now. But until I hadn't seen this slide before, but this could be an example of Reuben, the tribe of Reuben and Gad, seeing these fertile plains. Look here on the right-hand side of the Dead Sea, the fertile plains, and now you're going to turn tan. That's elevation. You're going to be in arid country. And look at the plains over here in what's going to be Judah. And they couldn't see that part of the country. So think of this as people today. You know, they see what's right in front of them, and I'm happy now. I'm ready. I'm good. I don't need anything else. And not really knowing how much more that the Lord has in store for his faithful people.
Stop a few miles short of the promised land. Anybody else on this question before we move along? Question number 3. What compromise did Reuben and Gad propose? Taylor?
Well, their compromise is to basically accompany Israel into the promised land, at least the men of war. And we kind of mentioned it earlier, we're not sure what exactly initial request they had in mind, if this was part of, you know, what they were thinking to begin with. For Moses' reaction, it doesn't appear, unless it is left out of the narrative that it was. But whether it came now or then or before, they come to Moses and say, look, we'll send our armed men with the rest of Israel into Canaan to accompany, and then after Canaan is subdued, then our men will come back. And so it's kind of interesting to wonder how many men stayed behind, because certainly you'd have to have some stay behind. They build the cities, they're going to leave the families behind, the children, the livestock, and so certainly they wouldn't have taken all the men. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that they left 70,500 men behind. It's sort of interesting to speculate. We don't know for sure, but there would have been a large contingent left behind, as well as accompanying the rest of Israel into the promised land. And it seems in verse 16, that they came near to Moses. And so whether that's a time later, they've been rebuked, they go back, then they come back with this compromise that, will accompany, or whether it's a more immediate thing in the narrative. Moses is calling them on the carpet and they step back, and then, after he has said his piece, then they come forward with this idea that they have. It's interesting, but now they're approaching Moses with a goodwill gesture, whether or not that was the original intent. And it says, in verse 17, I think, "But we ourselves will be armed, ready to go." And this is better rendered as we will equip ourselves in haste. In other words, it's not just we will go with you armed. We'll be ready soon. You know, so they'll make the preparations and then be on standby, basically, to accompany Israel and to conquer the promised land. So it seems that there was a willingness not just to go, but to go as immediately as possible. Because, again, the sooner they could help Israel subdue Canaan, the sooner they could get back to their inheritance.
Thank you. Who else would like to address the compromise proposed by the men of these two tribes? Well, Taylor's point, some commentator I read had some math that where they compared the census from Numbers 26 to Joshua 4:13. In Joshua 4:13, I think it said there's 40,000. So they combine the numbers of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh together, and they came up with like 110,580. So I think there's where that 70,500 came. And you'd have to think that they wouldn't just leave the women and children back there alone with nothing but a mud fence to protect them. And it's hard to think that these guys had the faith in the Lord that people, you know, it was their great faith that they thought the Lord was going to protect them, but that could have been.
So
Dennis?
110 and 70 stayed back in 44,000 to go over and help fight.
Yeah, I think in Joshua 4:13, if my notes are correct, it says this. About 40,000 prepared to war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. So the previous verse says the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. So that's
44,760.
Anybody else on this question? Some other things to think about. You know, their proposal, because they had to leave back all these people, that hurt the fight. There wasn't as many people to go. They probably didn't appear to be as fearsome to the Canaanites as before. Something Taylor kind of mentioned earlier is the density of people. So, yes, it did give more land to other people, but the density of Israelites in Canaan to drive out the pagans was not as much. So, and we see later on, you know, that they don't drive out everybody. If these tribes had gone over there, they probably would have been more reason to drive people out. And another thing, as Bart's point, you know, they're out here on the eastern edge. They're the first to go into captivity. Anybody else before we move on? Excuse me. Question number four. How did Moses respond to Reuben and Gad's proposed compromise? Bill, would you like this question?
Well, in verse 21, the condition there is all your armed men needed to be part of the group that was going to then move into the promised land. All your armed men. Verse 22, the condition was after the land had been the inhabitants of the land had been run out. Afterwards, you may return blameless before the Lord and before Israel. Verse 23, Moses warned that breaking this agreement was sinning against the Lord. And verse 25, Reuben and Gad agree to these conditions. So, you know, that's really how Moses restated what they had proposed. They agreed to it and trying to hold them accountable. And then pointing out that this is before the Lord.
Right. Before the Lord, and in verse 21, all your arm.
Yes. Yes.
Who else would like to address how Moses handled this compromise? Bart?
Yeah, like there's several possible sermon titles found in this area. And the one that stands out the most to me is your sin will find you out. So Moses lectures, obviously. It's like a sermon. So he's giving them a sermon. And it made me think of Galatians 6. Galatians 6, we talked about this when we studied. Do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. So Moses is essentially predating Paul a little bit here and saying that your sin will indeed not be forgotten. And also, I think, just from my personal opinion, that these individuals hadn't sinned at this point, because Moses, and you know, it's debatable, obviously, but in Moses, in verse 23, Moses says that if you don't do what you promised to do, then you have sinned against the Lord.
Okay. I look forward to your sin will find you out, sir, in the future. Yeah, I mean, it is very debatable if their desire was sin or if it was their actions, how they reacted. Anybody else? Before we move on. I guess kind of to Bart's point, the other side of that coin is we look back in Genesis 17:8. I don't know what to think about it, but you know, it was also give you, this is a problem promised to Abraham. I give you and your descendants after you the land which you are a stranger, all the land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So, are they rejecting? Is the promise of God not good enough for them? That's, you know, one of the things. And then, you know, you see this when they're getting ready to cross over in Deuteronomy 1. It says, you know, Moses talks about the land you're crossing over to possess. So there's several ways to look at that. Dennis?
With these tribes, they were unfaithful to God, and his descendants took them into captivity later on.
Yeah, I think it seems that, I think I read it somewhere, I think Bart mentioned it as well, that they were some of the first to go into captivity.
Okay.
Mark?
Yeah, that was Kaufman. I didn't look up the verse on that, but I think Nebuchadnezzar or Tiglath-Pileser did swing down that direction and assaulted that area first on his way to the Assyrian king. One other thing, maybe somebody else has mentioned this and I just missed it, but it's interesting to think of Moses. You know, he's obviously showing some ire here, and probably the greatest thing, the greatest desire that he has at this point in his life is to cross over, you know, and the Lord has just told him, cross over and go into the promised land, and here are these individuals saying, "Well, we're not interested in going." Moses is having one of his greatest desires taken away from him because of sin, and these men aren't even interested. So it you know, obviously that probably provokes his spirit a little bit. They don't desire the things of God like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph.
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought about how Moses would feel about that rejection that way. Taylor?
One other really quick thing. The phrase before the Lord, a couple people have mentioned it so far. This was sort of a phrase true in two senses. Not only would they be carrying out God's service, God's battles for Israel, acting before the Lord in that sense, Reuben and Gad, in the marching orders, immediately preceded the Ark of the Covenant when Israel would go out to march. So in two ways, they would have acted before the Lord.
Thank you. I saw several commentators mention that phrase. I thought I'd better touch on it. Anybody else before we move on to question number 5? Okay, question number 5 is, how did Moses ensure that Reuben and Gad would keep their commitment? Dennis?
Here's how I can tell. He made this arrangement with a public proclamation, sort of like tell these other priests and Joshua and the chiefs of all the tribes. So it was public, everybody knew what was going on. And if they reneged on their commitment, then they would forfeit the land, east of the Jordan. They would be made to cross over and fight to get some other land.
Right. Yeah. I was kind of curious of how that would work if they didn't go over and they got possession in the land of Canaan. You know, they wouldn't have had to fight to go over there. I didn't know if anybody saw an answer to that. Bill?
Well, and I kind of wondered if that might be why Manasseh's got some land on the west side of the Jordan. They didn't go, and then, so this stuff on the east side, maybe they're trying to take it for themselves. And I'm speculating, I don't know, but maybe this west side was an area that, because they didn't provide the manpower that was expected, but that's an awful big area to be given a tribe that was rebellious. So one little different, I felt like, you know, one of the ways that Moses ensured that Reuben and Gad would keep their commitments, and it was touched on, and I think that this is maybe a slightly different way to look at it, is through delegation. And he delegated, I liked it very much, made it public, sat out in front of all the tribes, the Eleazar and Joshua, you know, and the chief fathers. They were all, because, I mean, Moses knows his time's running short, so the rest of the other folks are going to have to keep going on this.
Yeah. Joshua and Eleazar, they're going to be the leaders after Moses, and tells them to make sure they don't back out. Anybody else on this question of how he would ensure that? Bart?
Yeah, in Joshua 22, and maybe you have, you're going to mention this, but when after the battles all happened and they're finished, and Joshua says to them, "You've kept all that you were supposed to do, that you promised Moses, the servant of the Lord. Now the Lord has given you this land, you may cross back over." They built an altar, the tribes of Gad and Manasseh, and Reuben built an altar on the west side of Jordan. And when the children of Israel heard about this altar that they had built there, they all gathered together, every tribe, and they were at Shiloh there in Ephraim, and they were going to go to war against the tribes that were going to cross over. And they sent Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, an imposing character, leading the deposition, and 10 rulers, one from each of the tribes. And they went to the tribes, the 2.5 tribes, and they said, "What treachery is this that you've committed against the Lord God of Israel, to turn from the Lord that you've built yourself an altar," and so on. And so there's this whole, so I think there was, how is Moses saying that we're going to make you keep the promise? They were prepared. Obviously, this wasn't very long, just a few years later, and all of the other tribes are ready to go to war and to decimate these tribes, cross over and battle against them and kill their own brother. And so I think implicit in this question is the idea that they're going to get some possession, but they're going to suffer for it if they don't keep the promise of the Lord. I think war probably would be my thought, about, just a guess, since we're not told specifically, but maybe they wouldn't be wiped out completely, but some sort of punishment.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that incident. Yeah, that's a good point. Who else would like to address what they had to do to make sure their commitment was kept? Bill?
So I don't have an answer. I have a question. The passage that Bart just mentioned, Joshua 22, of Joshua announcing to these tribes that they kept their promise, their commitment, how can that be with only sending 40,000 troops of 110 possible? The whole time I've wrestled with this this phrase, if you, your armed men, and I kind of wondered if maybe there was a distinction somehow, but it sounds like the group mentioned in Numbers 26, that's 110,000 men. That sounds like fighters. That's armed men. So I've wrestled with that. I don't quite understand how that works.
Right, yeah, I don't either. And to your point, what's in Numbers 26 was the census, which I think was men capable of fighting.
So I suppose there could be 70,000 that were capable of fighting but weren't armed. Maybe these were the city builders.
think they built the cities before they went.
Yeah. I mean, it seems that they weren't expected to bring every man that could. Obviously, they were leaving a ton of people behind, a ton of resources behind. It seems implicit in the text that you'd have to leave a ton, as you mentioned at the onset, of people behind to guard it. Because otherwise, I mean, Israel's gone for, the tribes are in Canaan conquered for years. You know, so it, you could argue that, yes, have that faith that everything's going to get taken care of. But in a practical sense, it made sense to leave people behind in the fact that they are told they fulfill their obligation. And Moses says, no sin if you do this, and then doesn't rebuke them for doing it in the manner that they did it. Seems to indicate that this was all above board.
Good reason. Anybody else before we move on to the last question? Grant, you get the hardest question. What areas were settled east of the Jordan? Grant, would you like to answer this?
Sure. I don't know what to say besides trees. I don't know if there were just more than a thousand words I can say. One thing I couldn't get at you with, though, is you know, this part of the land of the Amorites. So you, it was the kingdom of Sihon, the Amorites, kingdom of Og, which is the Bashan, Manasseh, Gilead, which is also of the Amorites. They built a number of cities, so they probably either was the land itself was didn't have a lot of cities in it, or they tried and decimated those and built their new cities. So the couple cities that they did take over and rename, but they have that larger area.
Yeah, as you pointed out, that was some thing that some of the commentators talked about, was that they renamed some of these places. Speculation, was it to get rid of the pagan names, or was that the reason? The other problem with it is it makes history accounting for difficult, confusing. Who else would like to address what land was taken? Oh, I had the same answer Grant did. Is I can look at the map, and that's about it. Taylor?
There's some really interesting stuff in here about Manasseh. It seems, I might not have a good memory, but it seems like up until this point, Manasseh has been pretty quiet in Israel's history. Reuben has sort of been a troublemaker. But here, there's quite a bit mentioned of Manasseh and the half-tribe. And it's interesting because up until this verse, there's no mention at all of Manasseh in this chapter, or even the tribe splitting. And so there are a lot of potential reasons why and how they get involved in this. The most common idea is just that they heard of the arrangement, and Manasseh, they had a lot of livestock as well. They were a large tribe. In fact, they were a tribe that its population had increased tremendously since between the two censuses. So that might be part of the reason that Manasseh feels, at least part of the tribe feels, that they should be privy to some of this land. And certainly there was enough land for them in this region. As you point out on the map, this was quite a lot of land to be divvied up. And so why the tribes split, why some end up on one side and the other, it's interesting to wonder. One idea potentially is that, as is mentioned in these verses, Manassites had conquered a lot of these cities, a lot of this land already individually. Verse 39 mentions that, and then that's probably contained in Numbers 21, verses 33 and 34, some of these battles taking place. And so at least part of the tribe, in verse 39, seems to be a pretty warlike, valiant people, a conquering people. And so there are specific conquerors even mentioned from the tribe of Manasseh and Jair. More is mentioned on him in Deuteronomy 3:14. And then from the tribe of Manasseh, later on, we see several great leaders, bold Israelites from the tribe of Manasseh, Barak, Gideon, Jephthah was a Gileadite. So Manasseh did contribute a lot. This idea of a conquered bold Manassite did manifest throughout Israel's history. Jair in verse 41 is interesting too, because it seems that his father was from Judah and his mother was of Manasseh. And so this would have been a custom break for him to take the tribe of his mother rather than the tribe of his father in this intertribal marriage, and speculation perhaps that this was due to wealth maybe on the mother's side. But there's a lot of interesting nuggets about Manasseh here, a tribe that I think we forget about a lot of times, contributed a lot to Israel's history, and we see them start to appear in this section of Numbers.